So, I'm Ralph, and today I'm joined by Dr. Will Newton, Senior Lecturer and Programme Director of Mechanical Engineering at Swansea University. We're going to explore how sketching and visual tools can enhance engineering education and creative thinking a little bit today. So, Will, it's great to talk to you today. Can you start by telling us a bit about yourself, your academic background, and how your interest in visual thinking and creativity in engineering education began?
Hi, Ralph. Yeah, so my name's Will Newton. My academic background runs back to Leicester University, where I did mechanical engineering. I worked in industry for a little while and then actually came back to academia, did a master's in mechanical engineering again and a doctorate, both at Swansea University. I've pretty much spent my entire career in academia at the sort of interface between academia and industry. So I'm always industry facing, solving problems with industry and for industry. In terms of visual thinking, I think we can go back even further, which is to think about making things. I've always been a maker. I did woodwork with my granddad, with my dad, and DT at school. And so I think back to those sorts of conversations of visual thinking was very much part of all of that. The first stages of trying to work out how something would fit together, first thing you do is get a pen and paper out, or paper and pencil, and look at those different ideas. So it's absolutely something which is fundamental to engineering design and making things, but being able to communicate those ideas always starts off with some sort of sketch.
I think that's very interesting. I guess we have kind of similar backgrounds there, actually, because although the engineering isn't so prevalent in my work, I come from a family where there was engineering and certainly that creativity. So I remember similarly hanging out with my granddad and making things, and my father, and knocking them around in a garage as that way of getting your hands on making to begin with. So that's an interesting trajectories. Our paths first crossed a long time ago. So I did some live illustration for a Bristol University event, which was on diversity in engineering, and it was something called the Kapow Project. And then that led to something at Swansea, where you guys had a conference on widening access, in particular for women in engineering. And I seem to remember we had a departmental tour at that event, and we ended up having a conversation about STEAM. So people are always talking about STEM, and we were putting the kind of art into that an acronym, and we started talking about exactly sketching, how that can boost creativity and help engineers communicate their ideas. So let's develop that a little bit. So unpack for me a bit more why sketching is so important for engineers in their process.
My first lecturing role was at UCL in London, and I haven't really looked at an undergraduate course in a very long time. And so getting to look at the undergraduate course there, I noticed that there was nothing on freehand sketching. It was just computer-based CAD. And I couldn't get my head around it, because when I was at university, we had to do a lot of sketching by hand. There's even an assessment on it, how well you could sketch by hand. Because, again, going back to what that communication is, the very first communication on any sort of design orientated task is to sketch out and work out what would work. Even if it's just a really rudimentary sketch, you always start with something. And so it's something which I very much championed at UCL, and an old colleague of mine actually started to bring that in as I left. There was some sketching going on there, so I was quite happy to see that. When I arrived at Swansea University, it was one of the very first things I wanted to do. I asked around the department to see if anyone was any good at drawing, because guess what, I'm not the best drawer, so I wouldn't feel comfortable leading a class on drawing. And it got me thinking, how do we get our students just to get the building blocks? I had this theory that if we could get the students to do simple shapes, squares, circles, triangles, they should be able to do some sort of amalgamation of those building blocks to come up with what they're trying to communicate, their ideas. And again, it doesn't need to be Picasso or Da Vinci type sketches. And what we're looking for is just very easily read block diagrams often. And so I started trying to enlist local technical colleges to see if we could just pay for one of their art teachers to come along and show us how to do it. And I hit so many roadblocks. Nobody seemed to want to do it, and I couldn't understand why. At one point, I was chatting to something like five different teachers across various technical colleges, but we just didn't get anywhere. And then I started chatting to you, and I was like, hey, do you want to come down and develop this this stuff with me? And it was just sort of, yeah, serendipity. It was just at exactly the right time. I'd been rejected a number of times, and then I met you, and it was great.
Interesting that you kind of got reluctance from what was on the doorstep. There'd be a thousand reasons for that. But, I mean, do you think there's any reflection in there that actually those kind of colleges and what have you would also be leaning very heavily into using digital? So were they in that kind of space where students were using CAD, students were using VR, students were using AI? Is that why people don't draw? Is that where that came from? Do you think, because I mean, I remember that was the sort of pain point that we were talking about, that that's yeah. why people aren't drawing, isn't it?
So I think that they, internally, universities and higher education, I think that that is definitely it sort of holds true. It's much easier to say, follow a course on, I don't know, SolidWorks or Fusion or whatever, because CAD is every university is a PC lab or PC room where you can put in a couple hundred students and they run through that. It's very much more difficult to get 200 students to sit down and draw something by hand and then also assess them and give them decent feedback on it and make it an enjoyable and worthwhile experience. So maybe that's part of it. As technology, you know, engineers, we're all about trying to not just solve the next problem, we're coming up with the next problem. We're trying to embed as much technology as possible and advance our students so when they are ready for their roles, they have had experience of the most up-to-date tech. So VR starts creeping in. The problem as well with an undergraduate degree is you can only do so much. So if something new comes in, something has to go. You can't just keep adding and adding and adding, especially with resources these days as well, so tight. So I wonder whether that's, you know, it's just been a natural evolution where sketching and drawing classes may have fallen. But yeah, it is interesting how these things have just sort of, you know, disappeared and, yeah, but there's a few universities that I know of that are really championing sketching and really, that's a Bristol University. They've got this, prof there, James, he makes all the first year students go and draw. It's a fantastic little scheme he's got there. We've had a bit of a conversation on, you know, whether we should do something similar at Swansea. But yeah, there are universities that are still doing it, but there's lots that I feel may have just dropped it altogether.
Once we got chatting, obviously, we kind of saw our different connections in the world of LinkedIn. And I think I saw somebody, you were connected to somebody called Alan Williams, who was a naval architect. And I saw some comment he put on some chain, and he gave this really good example. So he said, look, you know, tomorrow's engineers need these speedy visual thinking skills. And his example was, he said, right, you're on the dock at the bottom of a ship, and you're yeah. trying to explain the urgently required repairs to a ship's hull and how part of an engine needs remachining. You sure as hell better be able to communicate really quickly. And yep. it's a sketch that's going to do that. It's going to speak the thousand words, outline that essential solution for the engineer to then develop and work up. And I think that encapsulates that skill, which is great to hear other universities like Bristol, as well as what you're doing in Swansea, where people actually got that kind of insight that at the end of the day, you know, an automated machine's going to come up with all sorts of stuff. But that human skill, very quickly, thinking laterally, not in a programmable template way, is actually what's going to kind of get you out of jail, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you bring language in as well, that's another hurdle we have to deal with a lot. So, you know, engineering is a, you know, international subject. So you could be working in a team full of people from all over the world. And so sometimes they may not have the words that they need, but if you can draw something out, that's really it's really good and the quickest way that you can get that sort of idea across. Something we really hammer home with our students, and again, it's not about having the best drawing. It doesn't have to be the skill set doesn't have to be so amazing that you're wowed by the sketch. It just needs to convey the message of what you're trying to get across. And so yeah, it's something we really sort of champion here at Swansea.
So a friend of mine in Estonia called Kati Orav, she has a book on visual facilitation. She talks about the power of the imperfect line. So actually that idea that it doesn't always have to look like a beautiful illustration. I mean, especially now we're thinking and talking of AI, which is going to be able to do, I can say to AI, make me a portrait of Will Newton and make it look like Rembrandt, it'll do it. But if I stood here and sketched quickly what you look like, I capture the essence of you. So it kind of moves into a different space there. And actually, a lady that I've spoken to in an episode before on this little podcast from Italy, she talked about how when she was actually with engineers in the workplace, and she did have people from different cultures and linguistic backgrounds, as you've alluded to, the way to get everybody on the page and for everybody to feel heard and involved was by mapping out and doing the drawing. And actually, when she had maybe, let's say, a stereotypical type of engineer who might not have been going to be very forthcoming in how they were speaking or want to put that forwards, it kind of got those people out of their shell and it crossed that language barrier. So exactly as you've explained there, that is how that's so useful. So I'm thinking back to when I did some of those masterclasses for you, where we did those building blocks of drawing that you've referred to with your first year students, and that kind of line, tone and texture was what I gave them a bit of. And then we kind of got into a bit of form. And I think we used a wind turbine at the start of when we did that. So remind me why we did that, because we had a wind turbine at the beginning and we had a wind turbine at the end. What was the reason for doing that as well as the delivery? Because you had a kind of output from that I think had some application in use, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I can think about a thousand reasons why these skill sets are worthwhile, and I can think of how many times have I sat in a room with other engineers, whether they're from the same team or from a company, and I've done a sketch. I know the value of it, but we want to show the students the value of it, and we want to show the wider academic community too. So we set up a survey, so basically to try and gather data. But I thought that rather than just asking questions of students, why don't we show output? So ask them to draw something before the class, ask them to draw the same thing at the end of the class. What's the difference? And so we had a little conversation about what could we do. It might have been Dr. Pete Dorrington that came up with the wind turbine. Can't remember, but someone suggested wind turbine because it's actually a really good example, because there's lots of shape. It's a dynamic structure. It's not a very it's obviously moving, but the actual turbine themselves has got lots of twists in there. And so you ask someone to draw that from memory, how blocky is it going to be? How much texture is it going to have? Is it going to have any shading? All the little things you taught them in that session, and see whether they have a different output from the beginning just by reminding them of, if you do draw a box on the ground and there's sun shining, it's going to have a shadow. Will that make them reimagine how they drew it initially? And the output, when we did it, it was really eye-opening, because there were much larger differences to what I was expecting. Again, it's a hypothesis, so it's great to have an experiment, right? Like we have a hypothesis, we run an experiment and see where we're at. And it was actually, the outputs are great. And then from that, we went to present it at a couple of different conferences and got more feedback from the wider academic community. I went over to Parma to present it. It's an international conference on engineering education. And what was great was we had people there from all over the world. some people were like, oh, this is great, this is a fantastic idea, would we be able to use the framework you've come up with? Whereas other universities were like, oh, we're already doing this, we've been doing this for years. I think one guy says, oh, this is so rudimentary, we do way better at our university, which is always interesting to hear, you know, the scales. But yeah, it's really interesting to see how, you know, this fits within the wider academic community.
That's fantastic. And it was really great, I think, that you had that, you know, summative data, as it were. And I found it really interesting as to how your students walked in, and some of them, it was very much stick man drawing. And then by the end, they had got that tone and form, and they were bringing the object to life. You could have stood it on a page and it looked like it was going to rotate and start working. And then we also met where we presented that paper on sketching for creativity in Bristol last summer before you'd gone to Palmer. So it was nice to have that inroad and connection. I'm remembering that then I came back to you guys again and built on that session, and I was really keen to do something different with the students. So my interest was there in drawing as a verb rather than a noun, and how the thing is about the ideas rather than the art. So that builds on the idea of the imperfect line that I referred to. And you might remember that I introduced a student to what's called there, Brandy Ajabek, with her drawing quad, which was that idea of using drawing to think. So I tried to introduce that to the students, and we did a little bit of one-point perspective that time, so they could develop a little bit further in their drawing, which I think was really good. And I think also Sunny Brown, the visual language of the very basic shapes, the sort of line, the dot, the diagonal, the curve, but how you could put that together to make another alphabet, as you were, a language. And I think I noticed again that there was a bit of shift in mindset once you presented that sort of thinking to your students. So I again got the impression, had they actually come across the thinking like that before, that a visual thinking tool, not about beautiful drawing, but about the iterating and the process being really important.
Yeah, absolutely. These things are always an evolution, right? So we started off really simple, we've added a bit more complexity into it. The overwhelming sort of feedback we've had from the students is, this is all great, you know, we've really enjoyed this because it's given us a different dynamic. I think one of the major things is that it's the nervousness of getting over the first drawing. So sort of like that thing of, oh, I can't draw. And then they start doing these little shapes. The great thing about that class was, you know, you're talking, you're showing them, and they're doing it with you. And then by the end of it, they've drawn all these things, and you can see that they can draw. They've got this whole new catalogue of tools at their disposal, and now that you're giving them a new task to do. And I think the iterative, the extra stuff you put there, I really love the visual alphabet. I thought it was really cool. It's a nice new way for them to think about things, and hopefully they can get to that point where they are iterating their designs really quickly, using the tools that we've given them.
And I mean, it is really interesting that you talk about iterating there. It makes me think of prompting. So I mean, it's amazing, since we've last spoken on over the internet like this, I mean, the AI stuff is taking off like a rocket, isn't it? So I mean, we've got Visual GPT, Midjourney, Apple Intelligence. It seems to be changing by the week, the day, the hour. So really interesting as to how does that enhance students' creative development, but also how does it threaten it? So I guess what you saw in those sessions that we were talking about is it was the human engagement, wasn't it? It was actually making a mistake on the page and rubbing it out, or not rubbing it out, or ripping out the sketch of the page of a sketchbook, etc. It was actually the nuances and the essences and the things that those young people, only they can do, because a machine can't do that. So what on earth do you think is happening in that landscape? Because it's moving very fast, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I think you mentioned it. It's hugely exciting because we don't know where this is going, and we're seeing all these changes happen, at a rate of speed that we're not even comfortable with. But it's also a bit terrifying too, which way it's going. So in terms of the visual stuff, I haven't seen anything that worries me too much. what I have seen recently is the report writing skills that these tools are coming up with, and they're just coming on so quickly that, you know, it'd be hard to see a report that hasn't been written really, really well now, which is great. In so many ways, that's amazing, because that means we don't have to be concerned about that anymore, because you're always going to get a decent report. However, the language being used is not appropriate. It's very flowery. It's high level. There's no detail to it. And so I wonder whether it's the same with the visual stuff. You're going to get your basic idea across, but is there going to be a depth to it? Where does the creativity land? I'm sure you know much more about that side than I do. But as I say, there's one part of me which is really excited by it, but there's another part which goes, oh, what's going to happen next?
It would be very interesting to know how the kind of applications of AI could work with that, because I'm thinking of a vision picture I created for somebody recently, and it was the second one I had, and I had a detailed one that took me ages, and then the visual dimension of ChatGPT had come along, so I was able to sort of take my rough sketch to it, and I was able to iterate through my idea, and I was able to say, you know, change the perspective on this, play with this color palette, can you make that recede, I need to put this structure and shape into the front of my drawing, can you make me some suggestions? So I wasn't using it to create the end output, because if I did, it'll all look the same. But it was just developing and speeding up my thinking. So it would be interesting to imagine what might happen if one of your students was doing the sketching, which we want them to do, of their idea on the back of an envelope, fag packet, whatever, you know, that kind of fast thinking. And then that is a bit sketchy and a bit rough. Then if they can put that into the AI and describe it and say, actually, this is a crankshaft and a mechanism for this. Can you now help me move that in three dimensions? And then I want to add it. It would be very interesting to see whether the early stage human input to that helped them get further in that process. And if the two, as a sort of symbiosis of them working together, might be beneficial, or whether it will just whiz ahead and they'll become lazy and realize it can do it for them.
Well, again, I think that's the point, though, right? So you've used it as a tool. So, but the creativity is still coming from you. You're the person asking the tool to do stuff. And so this is something, again, which if I think back to when I first started at Swansea University, sitting down and reviewing design work, And you'd see these sketches, and it'd always be on lined paper, and it'd always be a biro and lined paper. And I said, like, this is just horrific. Why haven't you just taken a tool to scan in your sketch and turn it into something which is visually appealing? And students are looking at you like, are you talking, you know, what language are you talking? And it didn't even, you know, they haven't even thought about that. And this is only, you know, a couple of years ago when those tools definitely would have existed. Or at least, you know, copy what you've drawn out on your pen and biro. Just do it in PowerPoint with straight lines. And, you know, you make it look more visually appealing. So, again, the creative element is still there. It's still the student or the engineer doing that creative work, but they're just using the tools to enhance it. And I think that's amazing. You know, another example would be how many people use, a calculator in their day-to-day life. This is just a tool that we use. So there's nothing to stop you doing the maths in your head. You still need to know, you still have to have that numerical ability to do it. But if it's going to be quicker, I'm going to use it quicker. So as long as you talk about that human element that you know, driving it rather than it being the other way around. And I think at the moment where we're currently at, you can definitely see it when it's the other way around. So, you know, AI driving stuff in these generative things, you definitely are able to see it. But who knows? In the future, maybe they'll just be able to be so good to mimic what we're thinking. And
it's kind of the originating spark that strikes me as being very interesting. I mean, I was talking to somebody working in education who had put an entrepreneurial task in front of a load of students. So they had to come up with a bit like Dragon's Den, some business idea, and then pitch it back to their class. pitch it back to their teachers. And they said the amazing thing was that the students came in these amazing pitch decks. They had brand colours, logos. And for a second, the tutor thought, well, maybe they've gone to town and they spent all night doing this and they really love it. Well, of course, no. You know, AI had made the logo for them. AI had done the branding and it looked really slick. So the tutor turned around and said, so what? So what?
Yeah.
It looks amazing. But now you need the human skill of reading the emotion of the person you want to sell that to. And how are they going to buy it or how are they going to engage with it? And we kind of left with that piece. So in a different space, there's that sort of dynamic going on. But yes, it may be able to kind of speed the process up and make things look very shiny and beautiful, polished, finished, clever. But the cog that's turning round underneath of the thinking process. And I guess like the space to be fallible and to make mistakes. So if I think more as an artist, like some of my best pieces of work are what I think it was Bob Ross that called it happy accidents. So some things that you don't intend to happen that happen by accident. And I kind of think of that stereotype of the artist in their garret who's poor and, you know, never eats properly and they're just struggling away to make their artwork. But in that process, the struggle seems to be the important thing that then comes out in the final piece. So, you know, similarly with a mechanical process, it's like what they used to say in maths, you know, you'd like come out with the equation. They said, no, show us the working. How did you get to the answer? There's the answer. But how, you know, what makes that answer have credence? What makes that answer have weight? I guess that's a similar kind of question or thought that will emerge as there's more AI. So yeah, it's an interesting space to finish. And hey, look, the nice thing about talking to you today is you're a human being and you're not a bot. I've had a real conversation. So on that note, next time I have somebody on here, I'll be developing this conversation further around creativity and probably even more so now with emerging AI and that human space and what do we do in there. So can you leave me with a question to ask my next podcast guest so it just keeps following forwards?
Okay, so I've had a little think about this. I'm going to have a tongue-in-cheek question, which is pen or pencil?
That's very good. And as to which one they prefer and why?
Yeah.
That's the thrust. That's very good. I really like that. Well, that's a going to get me having some very strange dreams as I think about that. And really good, because it will divide people, absolutely.
It will.
So, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you today, and I hope we have a lot more of these conversations. And I'm always keen to know what you're developing at Swansea, and it's lovely to have opportunity when I can engage with your students. And I hope you see some of what we've injected in those little sessions coming out as they go through and they end and finish their degrees, and more to the point that we see more of it through other universities, as you've talked about today.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before you go, we've definitely seen an improvement. We definitely have. So, you know, something has, you know, we put this in place, and as the years go by, the sketching, the level of that, the students trying to get their design ideas across to us and there's initial design reviews, it's so much easier to navigate now. So it's definitely got along the right path.
Fantastic. Well, that's a pleasure. That was all I wanted to come out of it. So yeah, if it makes people articulate and clarify and communicate better, then job done. But yeah, thanks for talking to me.
Cheers, Ralph. Speak soon.
Take care.